our last Chabura of the Zman, of Mechiras Chametz, I want to discuss something that's only tangentially connected to what we've been doing this week, but it's an interesting and fun and kind of cross-disciplinary question, and that is married couple. What's the story with the wife regarding Mechiras Chametz? Now, a single woman who has property and has chametz obviously sells it just as a man does. She goes to the Rav, or she appoints someone else to go to the Rav, and she sells chametz. That's clear. The question is, what's the deal with a married couple? Should they each sell chametz? Should one of them appoint the other one to sell chametz on behalf of both of them? Is it enough that one of them sells chametz, the husband or the wife? Should it have to be the husband? What's the story with a woman's role in the mechiras chametz of the household chametz? So, I'm not aware of a lot of literature on this question. We had the Shivas Tzion this week. In passing, he talks about a woman selling chametz, but that's a different issue. He just says that if a husband is not around and he appoints his wife to sell the chametz, he should make sure that she has authorization to rent the premises also. He's not talking about a woman selling on her own. He's talking about a case where the husband will be the one selling, and if he's not around, he'll appoint his wife to sell. But what's the story in general? Do you need a woman's participation in mechiras chametz? So I really only know of one tshuva who discusses this. That is a tshuva in the Sefer Agudas Ezov Midbari, brought by the Sechemet. He was discussing a somewhat unusual case. He was discussing the case of a woman whose husband was mentally unsound. He was a shota. She was running the family finances. She earned money on her own. He wasn't supporting her at all. He wasn't making any money. She earned money on her own first. She hired herself out to work, and then with the money that she saved, she scrimped and she saved, and then she started a little business. And now she had money, and the question was, what should happen with Mechiras Chametz? He wasn't going to do it. He wasn't capable. He wasn't going to do it. The question was, can she do it or not? And he actually passed yes, although it was by no means a foregone conclusion. So in order to just get the framework behind this, we have to understand some basic things. First of all, there are really two questions when we talk about a woman selling chametz. We can talk about selling the husband's chametz, talk about selling her chametz. So to understand that, we have to understand the basic halakhic attitude toward marital property. Unlike in modern law, where certainly while the marriage is intact, the property is generally jointly held, notions of communal property or so on, halakha has a very different view of things. Halakha says there's basically no such thing as marital property. Property in a marriage is either his or hers, or his with certain rights that she has, or hers with certain rights that he has, but all property in a marriage can be defined, titled as either his or hers. Now, in the time of Chazal, Minastam, all the property typically belonged to him, with the exception of Nechse Malug, which we shall say was an unusual circumstance, but generally all the property belonged to him. The money he made certainly belonged to him. Even the money that she made, the halacha is, it belongs to him. Chazal were misaking that a baal is entitled to the masi daim of his wife. So basically, in the time of Chazal, everything was his.
Unless she makes stipulation, right?
Yeah, unless she makes, which we'll discuss soon, unless she stipulates that she wants to waive and decline that arrangement. Now, when we talk about the woman selling chametz, we have to talk about, again, the money that he makes, which is his in the time of Chazal, or the money that she makes, which is also his in the time of Chazal, but that, as Rav Sussman was saying, is there a way it's easier to get around that. In certain cases, that might be hers. Now, in the case of that Agudas Ezov Midbari, he was talking about money that she earned. She was earning money. She was saving the money. She was investing the money into a business and making money. So it was basically her money. Im Kol Zeh, he basically argues that since according to the rules of Chazal, he's entitled to all her money. Everything belongs to him, and therefore she shouldn't be able to sell. Now, even though he makes a basic argument, he says, L'maisa, Chazal, it was a two-way street. Chazal said that she gives him her Maisa Yadayim in exchange for being supported by him. In his case, she was not being supported by him. He wasn't making any money. He wasn't supporting her. And he takes for granted, he brings Shulchan Aruch, it's not so simple, but he takes for granted that if he doesn't support her, she keeps her Maisa Yadayim. So Lachar, she could sell him. He says no. She says a very big chiddush. She says that's only if he is of sound mind and on his own volition, decides not to support her, then he forfeits the right to get her Maisa Yadayim. However, if he's a shota, it's not his fault, then he does not forfeit the right to her Maisa Yadayim, and he gets all her Maisa Yadayim nevertheless, and therefore there would be a problem with her selling.
Isn't her choice?
Yeah, so get to that in a minute. Now, the basic question that he's dealing with, that if a husband doesn't support the wife, she keeps her Maisa Yadayim, he takes for granted that way. Truth is, it's not so simple. The original makar of the Shita, it's based on a Ramban and the Gemara, but the main one who said this halacha l'maisa was the Marit, who raised this. Marit said, Marit talked about a woman who was an Eishes Chayil, she was Kani Asocher, she hung around in the halls of power, the palaces of people, and she made lots of money, and she was the one she was the main breadwinner in the family. He clears the question. So it wasn't that he wasn't supporting her. It wasn't that he chose not to support her. The pshat was she was the primary breadwinner, so all the money in the household came from her. So the question was, is she entitled to her Ma'asi Yadayim or not? Now, again, there's no question if she would get up and say, Eini Nizonis Veini Osa, I decline the arrangement of Chazal, I would like to keep all my money. No question she could do that. Less mind the Pollock. But all these cases we're talking about are where she never actually said that going forward. She never actually made such a formal, explicit declaration. So the Marit, nevertheless, proposes the same idea that if her support is not coming from him, she doesn't have to make such a formal declaration. Automatically, she's entitled to keep her Maisa Yadayim. Whether the pshat is because since Lemaisa he's not fulfilling his end of the bargain and supporting her, he automatically forfeits the right to her Maisa Yadayim. Whether the pshat is it's like an implicit statement since she's not being supported, we kind of automatically say it's as if she said any zonis any yosa. One way or another, Marit establishes this rule based on a Ramban, which is what the Agudas Eza Midbari is assuming too, that Lemaisa, if he's not supporting her, she keeps her Maisa Yadayim. The Agudas Eza Midbari just adds, that's only if he could be and should be and isn't, but if it's not his fault, I'm not sure what the Sar is so much, but if it's not his fault, then he still gets her Maisa Yadayim for reasons that are not entirely clear. But at least in the case where he doesn't and chooses not to support her, she will keep all her Maisa Yadayim, according to at least some poskim, even without making a formal declaration of any zonis or any osa.
What if he makes a reasonable salary that's enough to support the family, but she makes more? Would that still hold?
So that becomes a tricky question. The Marit seems to assume that as long as he's bringing enough money to support her, even if he's making more. He actually talks about a case when she started out, she wasn't still in school or whatever, when she started out, he was still making money and supporting her. Then later, you know, as she got better, her income went up. He says as far that since when he supported her originally, all that money went to him, and then when she makes more money, still he's feeding her from the money that he got from her yesterday, so it kind of goes on in a circle like that. So as long as he somehow has enough money to jumpstart the whole thing and keep supporting her, it sounds like even if she's making more, it sounds like he might hold. As long as he's living up to his end of the bargain, she would still have to make a formal declaration of any zonis v'niyosa, otherwise she would, which obviously is very relevant, that's what you're alluding to, very relevant today. There are many cases where a woman might be making more money than her husband, like in my family, and then nevertheless, as long as the husband's bringing in something, we can clarify whether this rule applies or not. So that's a good question. I'll call upon him. But so far we have, if a woman says b'feirish ein nizonis v'niyosa, no question she can keep all her salary. Even if she doesn't, there are poskim who say that by default, if he's not supporting her at all, she keeps it. That already, not all poskim agree. It's a matter of some debate. Many poskim do say this. Agudas Eza Midbari says, when it comes to a shota, you don't say this for reasons that I don't fully understand.
In the case of a shota, she can still say nizonis?
That's a good question. I don't know that either. He doesn't directly address it. He might be assuming she can't say nizonis I don't know why she wouldn't. The reason she could say nizonis many other says, Mavura from the Gemara and the Poskim, is because the Takana was made l'tavasa. She could say, Yafshi b'takanas l'chama from Yon Zeus. I don't know why she couldn't say that for a shota, but I'll call upon him. So that's one question. Does she own her Maisa Yadayim or not? In a case where she is the only or primary breadwinner, certainly if she says anything to Feniosa, she would have property, maybe even if she doesn't. Now, the Agudas Eza of Midbari brings a second argument that even if we do say that she keeps her Maisa Yadayim, the rule is, by default, all property that a woman gets during marriage, she's Yarish property. Anything that he's not Zochen becomes automatically Nechsei Meluk, and the Baal gets Peres. So that lien of Peres, it's Mavur and Evanezer, is enough to block her from selling. If it gives him enough of a schus, the fact that he's Yerusha, the fact that he gets Paris, whatever it is, gives him Tekhanas Yusha, gives him the right to block her from selling. So Agudas Eza Midbari is worried, even if we'll say that she does retain title to her Maisa Yadayim, she still won't be able to sell. Lemaisa, at the end of the Tshuva, comes out that she could sell, but Tziruf Averi Yisvaris, and so on. But Lemaisa, these are the objections he raises to the fact that she should be able to sell. The one contemporary discussion I've seen of a woman in Mechiras Chametz occurs in a magnificent series of essays by Rabbi Chaim Jachter of Elizabeth. He starts his story by saying that on one Erev Pesach, he was sitting with a bunch of Rabbanim to sell Chametz, and he made a phone call. He called his wife, not for Mechiras Chametz, he called her to remind her to Mevatel Chametz. Because all the other Rabbanim looked at him like he came from Mars. Like, why do you need to do that? Why does she have to be Mevatel? You're Mevatel, that's good enough. It's more in the Poskim. A woman is Mevatel if the husband's not being Mevatel. Mashmah in the Shulchan Aruch in the early Poskim. If the husband's being Mevatel, that's fine. He said, no, you're right. In the time of Chazal, where the husband owned all the property, he's Mevatel. A woman doesn't have to. But Man Hazeh, I think things are different, he said. And most of the Rabbanim said, no, the halacha in the time of Chazal stays the same. The husband owns all the property, and she doesn't have to be Mevatel. He wrote a whole series of essays discussing the whole sugya of Bizman Chazal, Bizman Hazeh, whether a woman has any right to the marital property. And he argued that there's a very good case to be made that a woman is Bizman Hazeh, a shutuf in the marital property. Why? So, the big sugya brings numerous different arguments for B'Shem, contemporary poskim, earlier poskim, why that would be. Just briefly to run through some of the arguments. One argument is that the famous machlokas between Rosh Shalom Kluger and the Marsham and Rabbi Chiel Michal Hibner and the Mishkanos Haroim, we write in the Tanaim, V'yishlatun b'nechseim shava b'shava. The couple shall have equal control over their property. Some poskim, Rabbi Hibner, the Marsham, wanted to argue based on a Marik that means that the husband is granting her a co-equal right and share in his property. The Ikar Machlokas was whether she can give tzedakah. In the time of Chazal, she wasn't allowed to give tzedakah from the marital property more than a nominal amount. Bizman Hazeh, some poskim said you can because you write Bishtum Sam Shav B'Shave. Shlomo Kluger and others said no, that's just a bracha, it's flowery language, it's an aspiration, they should get along and not have fights over money, but it doesn't mean he's giving her any schus. That was one question, whether Yishlutim B'Nechseim gives her any right to make decisions that she wouldn't be allowed to make, Mi'ikra Din. The other question, of course, is Dina Malchus Adina. Do we follow the law in this area? So Rabbi Jachter brings a major machlokas between Rav Shlomo Duchovsky and Rav Aram Sherman. Rabbi Duchovsky tends to be more liberal on some of these things, argued that we could follow Dina Malchus Adina. It's a law that was made for Tovus B'nei Medina, as we discussed in the past, laws that are for the good of the public. Some people say some poskim say are valid. Rabbi Sherman fights back vehemently and says, no, it's not for the good of the public. Aaron Barak himself said that it's an agenda to promote the modern secular doctrine of equality between the sexes. It's not a Torah idea, and particularly the laws, the way they were in Israel, weren't particularly fair. They gave the woman too much power. He still has to take care of her and support her and pay her medical bills, and she doesn't have to work and still gets half the money. That's b'chlal not fair. That's why most states in the U.S. don't go with communal property. They go with equitable distribution, which is a much more nuanced system where the court gets to decide on each case based on what each party did and how much they put into the marriage, how much they should get, but not stam to give them all shove b'shove. All right, that's a technical question about communal property. The Dina Malchusa, there's some pretty fierce debates about whether it should apply, whether we can really toss out so much of Shulchan Aruch based on Dina Malchusa Dina. Minhag is another question. Do we say that since everything follows the minhag in many communities is that women have a say in the marriage, they're financial equals, the financial partners. Here we find poskim again all over the map. Some of the Dati Lumi poskim, some of the more modern poskim say, of course, the minhag, Rav Duchovsky says, I know, even among us dayanim, we all treat our women as equal, our wives as equal, and make decisions. Others say, what are you talking about? And in Torah families, the husband is the husband owns the money, he makes it, the woman stays home and takes care of the kids, and the husband is the breadwinner, and he makes decisions. Rabbi Jachter actually proposes a very cute argument. At one point in his, he's discussing him with machlokas between Rabbi Lau, the Pesach Choshen, Rabbi Lai, who seems to assume the halachas and the Gemara still apply, and Rabbi Yaakov Ariel, a leading Dati Lumi post, who says they don't, and the woman has more say. He wants to say it depends on the community. In more modern Orthodox Dati Lumi communities, then the minhag is the woman has more say. It's a more Western idea, while in the more Haredi traditional communities, the woman has less say. I'll call upon him. Minhag is another major idea why the marriages might be contracted into today would be al das the Western notions. This is a whole separate topic. Rav Avram Sherman goes so far as to say he doesn't like this idea of minhag or din malchus din. He goes so far as to say even if they explicitly write in their prenup or something, our property shall be governed by equitable distribution laws or whatever. We toss out such a contract, that's considered our code, that's considered rejecting Torah in even if you're not going to go to court, but applying a choice of law provision to use secular law is against Torah and it's invalid. This is a major debate, as Rabbi Jachter points out, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg and Mordechai Willig and the RCA poskim say you were allowed to do that, you were allowed to adopt a choice of law provision in a prenup to say that you want to follow things like equitable distribution laws and so on. I'll call upon there's a major machlokas among contemporary poskim, based on earlier poskim too, whether a woman today is really a part owner in the family finances or not. Again, without saying any mizonos or any of the traditional techniques, whether a woman automatically becomes a partner. But Jachter actually briefly proposes, might be relevant for Mechira's comments too. If you go with the old-fashioned system, which Rabloy assumes is still relevant today, the woman is nothing. She's simply, maybe she's authorized by him to make some decisions, maybe she's not, but all the money belongs to him. You certainly wouldn't need her to sign on to Mechira's comments, and might not even work. If she would want to do it without him, she couldn't do it. At best, she'd be like a nifka. While others seem to assume that, no, today she is some kind of shutuf. Once she's a shutuf, then we have to discuss. So if there are two shutfin, who has to sell the chametz? What do you do for every shutfus? If one shutuf is clearly authorized to make decisions, obviously he can act on behalf of the shutfus. So if the partnership of the spouses is understood to mean that each party can make financial decisions, then all you need is one. All you need is one partner, either one, to go to the rav, would be to go to the rav and say, I'm selling on behalf of the family. If you understand, so really it's manavshach. If you understand that the woman is nothing, that the woman has no ownership, then you need the husband, and if she wants to go, he has to authorize her, but he doesn't need her authorization. If it's more modern shutfus, then presumably either one can go. So either way, you wouldn't need him to get her permission, unless it was like the case of the Marit, where she mamish had her own money and he had no control over it. She said, but if Eirush ain't any zonis, or she was the sole breadwinner, then perhaps he would need her to authorize him to sell her chametz.